Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. I'm delighted to say that this podcast is sponsored by Peanut. Peanut is the app that helps you meet like-minded women who are trying to conceive, pregnant, or already mums. Peanut provides a safe space for women to build friendships, ask questions, and find support. Introducing you to women nearby who are at a similar stage in their journey, Peanut provides access to a community of women who are there to listen, share information, and offer valuable advice. Whether it's understanding IVF, PCOS, miscarriage, or pregnancy and beyond, Peanut is a place to connect with women who understand. I used to go to a weekly rhyme time class with Ren, and between the babies crying, the toddlers singing, and all the general noise and shenanigans, it could be really hard to stop and chat to some of the other mums. So when one of them connected with me on Peanut, it was fab. We made a beeline for each other at the next class and even went for a coffee together afterwards. Because of the app, it meant there was a friendly face in the room, which I have to say was just really lovely. You can download the app for free today. Head to peanut.app.link/finallypregnant or search for Peanut in your app store. And when you do, make sure you head over to the Finally Pregnant group. Hello, hello. How are you doing? I truly hope that you are well. And I am delighted to say that after almost a week of feeling totally rubbish, I am back. And honestly, I feel better than I have in weeks. As much as I felt like I had given myself, you know, some downtime and some breaks over the last few months, I actually realized that my body needed more from me, which is why it just totally shut down in the form of tonsillitis. You know, that whole IT thing, turn it off and turn it on again. That's what I feel like it did to me. And as crazy as it sounds, I'm so glad it did because I do feel so much better. Something else that has put a spring in my step is that Ren has taken her first ones. Whoop whoop, hashtag walking by Christmas. Having booked her in for a doctor's appointment last Tuesday, because everything that I read said, come 18 months, do get them checked out if there's no sign of walking. What did she do? Lo and behold, on Saturday night, gave us a few steps. So it is always the way, isn't it? And that's fine. I still took her to the doctors, who gave her the all clear and just said to come back in a couple of months if it wasn't progressing well. But I took her into nursery yesterday and they were amazing and encouraged her lots. They sent me some videos of her taking some steps and she practically walked out of there holding someone's hand and then took a couple of steps to me and we did a bit more last night. So whilst I did try not to worry, I really did. It was more frustration for her and with it being winter and not being able to go outside with her because not wanting her to crawl around all over the floor, etc., etc. I've got to say, it's a huge relief that she is actually up and running, so to speak. So that's a couple of good things that have been happening. As this goes live, it's Christmas week. And I want to say I struggled with Happy Christmas for so long. And I know that there will be people out there who are struggling with the concept of a Happy Christmas. But I want to send so many Christmas wishes to you and a huge, huge thank you for listening to the Finally Pregnant podcast. This year has been the most unusual one and the podcast was a bit touch and go earlier in the year due to lockdown and no nursery and the amount of time it takes me. But it is a passion project. It's something that I love doing and I'm so grateful to Peanut for sponsoring it. And I can also confirm that the podcast will be coming back for season four. But that's way into next year anyway. But I'm really happy that you found me or stuck with me through all of that. And yeah, you really are very special to me. So a huge, huge thank you. I do know that most of my support these days is focused on those who are finally pregnant and parenting. And that's because no one else is doing so much of that. But I am really, really excited to let you know that my other baby, Kat and Alice, is coming back. So if you don't know about Kat and Alice, I work with the incredible This Is Alice Rose. And we came together, gosh, back in 2018. And in 2019, we had a couple of incredible, overusing that word maybe, in real life events called Live Your Life. But due to all the aforementioned, it had to take a back seat this year. But we've been working in the background and we have recently announced our very first ever Live Your Life virtual event. Yay! It's happening on Saturday, the 30th of January, and we are really excited to be able to bring this to you. There is a fabulous lineup of speakers set to motivate you and help you reclaim yourself for 2021, as well as movement sessions, my Every Story Matters panel, and lots more. So head over to katandalice.com to get your ticket today, and there's a link in the show notes as always. If you are finally pregnant right now, though, you may know about my yoga sessions course. This has been like one of the silver linings of 2020, having kind of turned our hands to it, myself and a wonderful yoga instructor called Sim, back in July now, actually, was the first one. The January one, like all of the courses have sold out. The January course sold out back in November, which was just incredible. But last week I launched a brand new date for January and you can book your spot today. I'm recording this a week before it goes out and we've already sold a good few spots. So I'm hoping there's going to be some still available. The February one is available to book and there will be extra spots on that if the first course books up. So yeah. The new January course is on Monday nights and it starts on the 4th of January at 8 p.m. So head over to catstrawbridge.com/events for more information on that. And as always, show notes. Just before I hand you over to today's interview, I want to read the most lovely review that I happened upon earlier this week. I promise that I don't sit clicking refresh on the reviews to see if anyone has left a new one. Just desperately hoping. But this one, like I say, I just happened upon it and it reads, there's something for everyone in this podcast, whether you are trying to conceive, pregnant after loss or parenting. Kat's sense of humour, phew, an infectious laugh, which is lovely, thank you. And the fact that she gets it makes for funny, emotional and empathetic listening. Absolutely recommend this podcast 100%. Please keep making them. Thank you. I promise to keep making them as long as you want them. They are coming. So keep listening and keep reviewing. Thank you so, so much. Right, without further ado, today's chat, I'm going to hand you over in a second. I sat down with the most gorgeous couple, Lucy and Amy, aka Our Big Gay Journey on Instagram a couple of weeks ago to talk to them about their big gay journey. Well, big gay trying to conceive journey specifically. Amongst other things, we talked about how little advice there was out there when they first started looking for trying to conceive information and advice specifically for same-sex couples. Things have changed for the better since, not least because of their fabulous Instagram and YouTube channel. And the best news is that they have recently gone from trying to conceive to being finally pregnant. And we talk lots and lots about that here today. So I really, really hope that you enjoy our chat. And I wish you all a calm, peaceful, loved and cozy Christmas. Take care. Bye-bye. Okie dokes, how are you? Today we have got Lucy and Amy with us from Our Big Gay Journey and I am going to hand it over to you two ladies because I want you to share your journey, really, your big gay journey, to coin a phrase. So yeah, because I've been following you on Instagram for a good while now and Lucy, you are pregnant right now, aren't you? Spoiler alert, but you know, I think the name of the podcast gives it away, so we're all right there. But yeah, tell us who you are and how you met and how this came about.
So I'm Lucy.
And I'm Amy. I don't know if you can tell the difference between the voices.
maybe not. Now Lucy, you are pregnant. We'll just get that.
Yes, I'm the pregnant one. And we've been together for 8 years.
Yeah, I think we worked out the other day, didn't we?
It's getting to the point where we're losing track of how many years it's actually been that we've been together. And then we've been engaged for 4 years. We met when we were living at different ends of the country. So initially I was living in Sheffield and Amy was living in Sussex.
That's quite a distance.
Quite a distance, yeah. So when she finally wore me down and got out of the friend zone, We started a long distance relationship for a couple of years before we both moved to London, which is where we live now.
Yeah, so then what was it, maybe 3 years ago, we started to look into trying to have a baby. There wasn't actually that much information out there, was there, in terms of how kind of we did it as a same-sex couple. And we didn't really know, we didn't have any, we've not got like a huge group of like gay friends, have we?
No, we've not.
So we didn't really have them to kind of go and seek advice from.
What do you do?
So we actually, it was really random. I just was like, let's go to the GP.
And see what he says. Yeah. See if we can get some advice. Because at this stage, it was literally just for information. Mm-hmm. And he ended up referring us to one of the NHS fertility centres.
Yeah. He kind of, I say he was really good. I think it was more that we both sat there and he absolutely pooped his pants and didn't know what to say, didn't know what to do. And he was like, I'll speak to a gynaecologist. And then the next thing we knew, we were getting a letter. We didn't expect to hear anything, did we?
No, we didn't actually tell us he's referred us. We'd just got an appointment through. So I was like, okay, we'll go to it, see what they say.
And we kind of started on the road to IUI. Like, again, like we said, we didn't actually plan...
I didn't understand.
Oh. Google. Google doesn't know what IUI is.
That is a first. I'm leaving that in there. That is a first.
Let's turn Google off.
We'll be back. So you've been to the doctor. You've received this kind of surprise referral and you are heading down towards IUI as your first option.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it was kind of, we just kind of got going into that quite quickly, didn't we? I think with the NHS, everything's a little bit slow in terms of getting the next appointment, but everything that we needed to do, we kind of got a move on with. So we had to look for a sperm donor. They gave us advice on where to look for a sperm donor. We found that actually quite fun.
Yeah, a little bit of online shopping.
We looked separately. So I would often just browse at work and Luce would look at home, and then we'd send each other the... profiles, and we actually liked the same people, which was good.
And then we just kind of narrowed it down and agreed on the one.
And we've stuck with that one throughout the whole 3 years.
So you can tell IUIs didn't really work for us because it took another 3 years.
So all of them IUIs were negative, and I don't know. So with the same sex couple bit, it's supposed to be that you self-run six IUIs before you're entitled to go on the waiting list for an NHS IVF.
It's different.
I was just going to say, so going back to what you've said already, if I can rewind, if you were doing it again, where do you know now that you would be looking, that you would have looked and should have looked and maybe couldn't have looked but could now for anyone listening?
So there are quite a few, well, not quite a few. There's the Donor Conception Network, which is a website and like a support charity system for people conceiving through donations.
That's what you've done. So it's your egg.
Yep.
And then you've got a donor sperm.
Yeah, exactly. And then we also started up our YouTube channel because we couldn't find any information. We decided to share our story and everything that we found out along the way. So from that very first appointment of the IUI, we've made videos and shared our experience and information that we found. Yeah. As we've gone along.
And I think a lot of the YouTube channels that we did watch were American. So it's, even though we managed to take some things from it and make use of some of the things, but the healthcare system is completely different. And the medications are different as well as to like some of them. But YouTube was definitely a big help. And then Instagram has been, like the community on Instagram has been awesome.
It's incredible.
Like, that's probably, how do I say, like obviously the 3 years have been crap.
Yeah. But the friends anything, that we've made, yeah, and the support
if anything
that
good
got.
Could have come out of it, the friends we've got have been amazing, and the people that will probably be in our life forever, and the stuff that we've learned through Instagram as well, and through people that have gone through it themselves has just
like
a difference.
If you're ever not sure about something, if you ask someone on Instagram or if you put it out on your story, there's going to be someone that's gone through it or knows what we're talking about or that can advise us. And we found that very, very, very useful.
And this is within, I'm assuming you're talking about the fertility community as well as perhaps the gay community.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
So it's kind of like you've got the fertility community, you've got the gay community, and then you've got a section that obviously crosses over because...
Single parents as well. But every little community has kind of had its own uses, and you've been able to pick like little bits from it and get bits of different support from it as well.
I think we're very lucky that we've got into like different communities.
It is. I've talked about this on the podcast before with people, how there is an umbrella of fertility, but within that there's so many strands that people end up going down. And there's a phrase, I feel like I keep saying this, but actually I think I keep saying it in my head and not actually writing it down or saying it out loud, but it's being used a lot with Corona at the moment, which is that we're all in different boats, but we're all in the same storm. And the fertility community is very much like that, isn't it? That I found personally.
And when you kind of join fertility treatments as a same-sex couple, you don't know necessarily if you've got any fertility problems, because obviously you've never tried for a baby before. So you're kind of going into it blind. You don't know if you're going to have, well, quotation marks, an easy time, or if you're going to have a three-year nightmare like we've had. So it's difficult. I don't think we ever kind of anticipated that we'd go through some of the stuff that we have done. We thought it'd be a couple of IUIs and we'll be done. We're just missing the sperm.
Yeah, we definitely just thought it was, we're just missing the sperm. And then it, like, after them negative IUIs, we just couldn't go for the six. Like, I felt like there was not enough in it, so we moved on to the IVFs.
Yeah, a lot higher in the percentage success rates, a lot higher chances, and
I felt like we had a bit more control.
A lot more control,
yeah. A bit more, like, well, you don't really have much control in IVF, but, like, a little bit more than IUI.
Someone had some control somewhere.
You feel like you do. And did you, so if you didn't do the six that you were supposed to do as a same-sex couple, are you then paying for your IVF at this stage?
Yeah, we did.
So we did pay for the IUIs as well, but it was at an NHS hospital. So it was slightly cheaper, I think.
Slightly cheaper, yeah. Than doing it at a private clinic.
So now, yeah, we did pay for the IVFs. And I think that also means that you then can't go back and ever, once you've gone private, you can't go back to NHS.
Which is definitely a good thing to know if you're wanting to go down that route yourself.
Yeah. It is. And I don't know. I think I got away with it once, because I've always thought that that's the case. But I did end up having a private round. So I had one NHS round, and then I had a private round, and I moved before I had the private round, and then I did end up having another NHS round, which, can't tell anyone. I've always been under the impression, I just didn't say anything to anyone. It didn't work, but that's not the point. But yeah, I just, to do check that, and yeah, keep shtum. I didn't say that. But you know, this is the message.
Especially if you're in a different area.
Exactly. Obviously, we need everything we can get, quite frankly. So you are headed down the route of private IVF. Did you know who was going to have the treatment from the beginning?
Yeah, we did. You can tell this story.
Basically, if you knew us in real life, it would be very obvious that I am
a hypochondriac.
I'm probably the biggest wuss. I don't think I'd be able to do it. Like,
and I've always wanted to be pregnant. I've definitely paid more of an interest in
carrying
a child, whereas you're not. Well, I don't think anyone looks forward to giving birth per se. But yeah, no, I'm definitely more interested in getting pregnant, whereas you didn't want to also get fat. And
I did. So that was a bit of a running joke. I was like, I can't do it. Like, I would do it. And I think now, Lucy being pregnant, I've definitely got more of
a
desire to do it.
So you potentially do it in the future.
Yeah. It was more, it meant more to you. I always said, like, I was ready to be a mum, but I wasn't ready to be pregnant.
And we know that this baby's yours as much as it is mine. Like, that wasn't an issue that we felt we had.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was quite a natural decision.
I know that people have messaged us and they said they've really struggled to come to the decision as to who would carry, and asking for advice and things. And I almost feel a little bit like we're a bit too blasé about it in some ways, because to some people it's a huge deal. Just to us,
it just naturally came.
It wasn't a hard decision for us. So I feel like I'm just like, oh, I don't really know what to say, like, when people ask. It's just a case of talking to each other, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, you'll figure it out.
And we will talk, Lucy, to you about actually, you know, the actual pregnancy as well. But Amy, I know from conversations with my husband and with other partners out there, like, and you're here. So if you don't mind me asking, like, what is it like watching someone go through it, because I don't think that's, you know, you say that I'm a hypochondriac and a wuss and all of that, but I think it takes quite a lot of nerve and balance and strength to watch someone go through fertility treatment.
Yeah, it does.
You always said that that was the hardest part.
It was the hardest part. And this is going to probably sound so soppy, but I love Lou so much, and I'm so, so proud of everything that she's done. And I'm so proud of her, and I just think she's incredibly strong. And I never thought I could love her so much more than I did. And watching her go through everything that she has done, I do. And her being pregnant now, I'm like, wow, I didn't know I could love you so much. But the whole kind of, through the IVFs, we had chemical pregnancies and the miscarriage. And she had multiple surgeries for polyps and cancelled cycles and things. And my hardest thing was watching her so heartbroken and not being able to do anything about it.
Yeah.
And it just broke my heart. Like
you're already heartbroken, and then you're heartbroken as well for me being heartbroken.
Yeah, that was the hardest thing, was watching her so sad about something she wanted so much and I had absolutely no control over fixing.
Before IVF, Amy had never seen me cry.
Yeah.
Wow. And I don't think I cry a lot, but that's really quite impressive.
The first time she did it, I was like,
oh, what do I do?
That must have been so, like, you know, we do giggle, but that must have been so hard.
It was. It was tough. And I think it was probably the most, like, for all of it, to be fair, has been the most emotionally challenging thing I've ever done in my life.
We've definitely learned a bit of resilience.
And have you learned lots about each other as well, I bet? That's what I think with me and my other half.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've seen each other at highs and we've seen each other at lows. And
yeah,
I don't know. It's just like a deeper understanding and a connection, I guess.
Yeah. And I wasn't always a wuss. I was good at giving injections.
she was good at stabbing the needle in there.
Well, that's something completely different, maybe. No. Oh, but that's your profession. You work in healthcare, don't you, as well, Amy? So, yeah.
Yeah, she was quite happy to let me do it. I think we did talk about that in the future, if I do it, that I would be absolutely petrified of taking the Pontagest injections, whereas Lou says, but I'd be petrified of giving him to you. I'm like, okay, we did it the right way around for the first time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to give an injection to someone else. I completely agree with that. Oof, no. Whereas doing them to myself, I'm totally fine with, so.
It's also increased my confidence at work as well. If I get a kid now that needs an IM injection, I was like, yep, I'll do it.
I'm in. So while we're just on this kind of conversation about a partner who is there while someone's having the actual physical treatment, did you find that there was support there for you in your part going through that, Amy?
We kind of dealt with things, I think, quite a lot on our own in terms of just talking to each other. And we've got an amazing bunch of friends, like, who have been, even though they don't necessarily understand all the ins and outs, like, they've been incredible. Our main support has come from our friends, the Instagram, like, the fertility community on Instagram, and from each other.
Your managers have been really good as well at work.
My managers at work and things, even though it's not, like you said, it's not me been actually doing the injections and things, were amazing. Like, I couldn't ever fault them. They let me leave work early every day for, not for 3 years, but every time we did sections of giving Pontagest different at certain times, like, I was allowed to leave work early to come and home and do them. And, like, it's a big commitment, especially as the wards get busier and things, to still allow that. And in terms of when we've been at appointments, I don't know if this is different because I am a woman. There was never any point throughout the whole 3 years at the NHS or at private where I felt like I wasn't as included as Lucy in the whole process. Like, I would always be referred to. Yeah, there was never any point that I felt like I needed to kind of put my hand up and be like, hey, I'm here.
Yeah, they spoke to both of us and they included us both in decisions and they just acknowledged that we were both there.
Yeah, but then I've also spoken to male and female couples and they'll say that the guy feels like he's not as involved and things. And I don't know if it is just that the doctor automatically sees a woman and maybe tries to include, like, includes them. Because
maybe.
I don't know.
Or it could just be that we've got really good doctors.
Yeah. Consultant was very good.
I suspect that there is a lot of psychology that goes into answering that question. And you might have been, like, lucked out in the healthcare professionals that you actually had sat in front of you as well. But it's amazing to hear that. Like, so often we do hear the negative stories. Often they are from men And it is incredible to hear that you didn't have that experience. And that's what we want for everyone. That's really, really positive. So you mentioned there, and these are unfortunately very sad experiences, that during the fertility treatment, you had both a chemical pregnancy and a miscarriage. I've been through those myself. I know how heartbreaking they are. How did you pick yourself up again to have the next round afterwards?
I think after the first one, so we did three cycles of IVF. We had two chemical pregnancies for cycles one and two. And then on the third one, it was a miscarriage. I think the first one, it took us the longest to get over, didn't it?
Yeah, that first chemical pregnancy was intense. And I think it was partly because it was, after the three negatives, it was the first positive that we'd seen.
Yeah.
And like I said before, we thought we were just missing the sperm. So now we've gone to IVF and you've got them increased chances. We're like, yes, we're going to nail this.
So shoo-in. What could go wrong?
And it was just that you started to bleed throughout the two-week wait, didn't you?
Yeah, so before we'd even tested, we didn't think it would be positive. And then it was, so that we were even more confused.
And it was
then
a strong positive.
It was a strong positive. And then my beta levels were still doubling, but I was still bleeding. So then they were confused and we were confused and
that was intense, because every time you went to the toilet, and I tried so hard not to do it, but every time she went to the toilet, I was staring at her when she come out. When I was trying to not ask her if she'd bled, it was more, I was trying to read her
face.
It was hard.
But yeah, it came to a point that I started getting cramps and clotting, and then from that point we went for another blood test and it confirmed the chemical.
I think we were kind of just relieved, we knew at that point.
And then we took like a 3-month break after that one, which I think was the longest break in between the cycles.
We went on holiday.
That was great. And we just kind of took time to enjoy ourselves, to enjoy each other. And we focused a lot on like diet and exercise as well.
Tried to.
No, we did really well that time.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced by that face.
Then we went in for the second one. We were in a good mindset again.
Yeah, really
finally.
Good. Oh, yeah.
And then we had another chemical pregnancy, which was, it started off as even just a faint line. And
but that whole was just a bit of a, nothing kind of went to plan really anyway.
Yeah, it was just one of them cycles where we didn't expect it to work.
So then when we got the positive, we were like, damn, it worked. But yeah, that didn't last very long, did it? I think on the second beta.
Yeah, no, the first beta was low and then the second beta hadn't risen. So it was very early on that we knew that wasn't working out, but painful all the same. But we'd already kind of built up a little bit of kind of resilience to it. Like, it didn't quite feel real, or I don't really know what it was, but we kind of went straight back in for another cycle, didn't we?
Yeah,
like the second that they told us we could do.
How I think in between that there was delays because of polyps.
Oh,
I don't know what's wrong with Lucy. Like, she
I grow polyps.
She just grows polyps like they're nothing. She'll have them removed, and then the next time we go, there'd be more, wouldn't there?
Yeah, it was a nightmare. So I've had many
You know, you mentioned earlier on you didn't know whether or not you had any fertility issues personally. Is at this point, do you have a diagnosis? Are the polyps affecting the implantation? Because that's, you know, possibly one of the things. It might be the quality of the embryo as well. But, and you know, this, we're not going to go into deep medics here because, well, you might, I'm not. But do you have a diagnosis of why they think this is happening?
No, we don't. So before every transfer, they'd always check for polyps, and then it'd get the transfer, like IVF would get delayed to get the polyps removed. So every time we went into it, we knew that there was no polyps. So that wasn't why we kept having our losses. We did recurrent miscarriage tests. We did all sorts. We did like the genetics and
yeah, after that second round, the consultant did loads of tests. I can't even remember what they were, but he did them all and everything came back fine.
Which was even more confusing.
Yeah, but it was good. It was also, it's a really confusing time because it's like you don't know whether you want there to be something so you can have an idea of, okay, this is why it keeps happening, or you want it to be all clear and you're like, okay, great, let's just crack on. I say it was only two chemical pregnancies, but I just think because it's so prolonged out over such a long time and we'd had the three IUIs, it just felt like it was going on forever.
Yeah.
And I think mentally it felt like it had been like
a long time.
Yeah, it was
it's a lot to go through, you know, and you are kind of constantly trying to process the grief of the baby not being here. And that can be because of the negative tests, that can be because of actual kind of physical losses of a pregnancy. It is a lot to process. And I think that's why it does feel like a long time. It is a long time. It's a lot. And so then you headed into your third round of IVF, which I think you're going to tell us was the miscarriage.
Yeah, that's right.
That was a crappy cycle, wasn't it?
That was off. Well, the cycle itself was good. Yeah. Like, it was the first IVF cycle where I'd had embryos left over to freeze. Yeah. So that was amazing. So we instantly felt relieved knowing that if it was to go wrong, we didn't have to start again from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Them injections, they take like I say, it wasn't my body, but it takes a toll.
Yeah.
Doing it for that long, doesn't it?
Like, yeah, it does. We did three cycles effectively within like a year. Was it a year? It must have been a year. Which is obviously quite intense on your body. Where were you going with that?
Don't know.
Just recognizing that it is a lot. Three cycles pretty much back to back with losses. It's a lot to deal with. And then you go into what sounds like a complicated round and you experience a miscarriage. Where do you go from there?
So we found out that we were having the miscarriage just before Christmas. So that was rubbish. We'd not told anyone that we'd done it. That was like the first round that we kept a secret. And then we had to tell everyone over Christmas why we were so miserable.
We usually go back to family members in Manchester for Christmas, and I just didn't want to go.
No.
But you thought it'd be good to kind distract of us. Distract us. And it was, but it was just crap. Like,
yeah.
I look back now, I love taking pictures of everything. And I looked back the other day and I think we've got maybe two pictures around Christmas time.
We don't even have a picture of the tree.
Yeah, there's nothing. I was just miserable. It was horrible.
Yeah. So this Christmas is going to be better, COVID or not.
So was that just last Christmas?
Yeah, it was.
Okay. So this is very recent, all of this.
Yeah, so I think on the 2nd of January, we waited for it to try and pass naturally, stop the medication, and then it didn't happen. And then on the 2nd of January, we had a D&C. So that's how our 2020 started, and we think we jinxed it for the rest of the world.
But no, because there's a lot that positive is coming out of it, isn't there?
Yeah, very, very true.
So tell us, you make the decision that you're going to just kind of keep going at this round four.
Yep. As soon as, again, they told us that we could do. It was very soon that they told us that we could do. We just cracked on and started the protocol for a frozen transfer. And then COVID happened.
Hold up. We checked for polyps this time and there was no polyps, which was amazing. And then started the cycle and everything. And then what was it, 2 weeks before transfer?
I think even later. I think about a week before we were due to have the transfer, lockdown happened. So.
And they cancelled it.
Everything was cancelled, and then we were in that kind of group of people where everything just got delayed and we didn't know when everything was going to start up again, which was frustrating, where it takes a lot to kind of be mentally ready in the place to try again and then to have it all cancelled and to not have any kind of idea when it was going to be or how it was going to be or anything.
And the clinics couldn't give you much reassurance because they didn't know. And then I feel like I got quite sassy, didn't I? I was a bit sassy. Yeah, I had to kind of take a step back a bit, I think. I was just annoyed of what was happening. I was just annoyed and upset.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it? So it was a few months later? How long was, I can't remember.
So I think it was cancelled in the March or the beginning of the April.
Beginning of April, I think everything closed. And I think, like I say only, I think they were only closed for about 6 weeks or so, wasn't it? But it because we didn't, it felt like longer. And because no one knew at the time. Yeah. So you're in this 6 weeks, but you don't know if it's going to be 6 months. So it's easy to say that with hindsight. And if you have a cancelled cycle of treatment, a month is a long time to get to the next one. So yeah, that was a long time and for everyone.
But we were very thankful in that when they did start up, we were in the very first set of people that they did start putting through the treatments again. I think because we were a frozen transfer, it was, you didn't have to do stims, so it was a bit easier to get us moving again.
However, there was polyps now.
So then we had to get delayed again because I had to get my polyps removed. Then we finally got to our transfer.
So when's this?
And we up to? Are we up to June?
I don't know.
I think we're up to June. Maybe July.
2019. 20. Where am I? June 2020. June, July 2020. So you have that transfer, finally.
Finally.
And then you have your 2-week wait.
Went okay, didn't it?
It was the most surreal 2-week wait because usually it's after like stims and your body's all a bit out of funk anyway. But it was literally just the progesterone and the estrogen. And this was the first time where I 100% did not think I was pregnant. I didn't have any symptoms, didn't feel anything, was like, it's not worked. And then it did.
We tested it, then we were convinced it hadn't worked. I was convinced because Luce hadn't said anything. Like, she hadn't been saying that she... I don't know, 2 weeks is early for symptoms anyway, isn't it? But you focus on anything.
Everything.
Yeah.
I came home from work. The test day was the next morning. I came home from work the night before. And I was like, let's just do it.
Yeah.
And we're thinking, is it even going to show? It's late at night. Like, let's do it.
Yeah.
And we just put the test on the floor, didn't we?
And also, we were so convinced that it hadn't worked. Obviously, we have our YouTube channel and every pregnancy test that we've done ever, we've filmed it and we've had the good news, we've had the bad news. And the one time that we didn't record it, because we were so sure it hadn't worked, is what we've got our baby from.
Yeah. But we just put the test on the floor and just, I was like, I think we put something over it and I just kind of kicked it off and was like,
what?
Damn, no way, okay.
It was like a good strong line. It was an evening test and it was the last thing that we expected and we just sobbed.
Yeah.
It was good sobbing though.
Yeah, but having been through everything you'd been before, like what did the next 2, 3, 4 weeks look like?
A big old ball of anxiety. We were very scared and very nervous. When did it?
I try so hard. It's so much easier said than done. And I think when you look back, you realise, you know, I tried so hard to not let the whole IVF and the whole loss control everything about our life.
Mm.
And it controlled a lot, probably 90% of it. But I think I just wanted to enjoy us being pregnant. Mm-hmm. Whatever happened, I wanted to enjoy it. And when I looked back on cycle one of IVF, it ended crap, but getting that positive test and
the third one before we had the miscarriage.
Let me redo that. When I look back on cycle 3 of IVF and they've got that 7 or 8 weeks, whatever it was,
mm-hmm,
that we knew we was pregnant for, I was so happy. Like, it was literally the best feeling in the world. And even though it ended so badly, I remember being so happy and how amazing it felt. So I just didn't want it. I didn't want the whole anxiety and being scared to completely control it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted, if it ended crap, I wanted to look back and enjoy it and not have spent the whole time scared, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think we did quite a good job.
We did a great job.
Until I started spotting.
Yeah.
So we've had many scans in the EPU and stuff, and I basically bled through my first trimester. But everything was fine.
If you could have seen us in the EPU, because obviously because of COVID, it's only one person. And it was the place that I work that we went to. So I tried to be a bit sneaky and I wore my uniform as I went. And I really wanted, thought it was going to get me into the scan. However, that wasn't what got me into the scan. We was in the EPU and Lucy didn't want to go. I'd just finished a night shift, but I promised her that she wouldn't have to do it on her own. And we got there and the lady said to me, "Oh, you can't come in." And I just lost it.
Like, you were sobbing in that waiting room.
When I think back, I feel like I probably had a panic attack or something. I was absolutely hysterical. And I just remember this one woman looking at me and I don't even know what she was thinking.
Mm.
I was hysterical and they wouldn't let me in.
Mm.
Until somebody, one of the nurse that had scanned us when she confirmed the miscarriage on the third cycle for the DNC, she come out and she was like, "You need to let her in that room."
Yeah.
And pushed me in the room and when we saw the heartbeat, oh my gosh, it was the biggest relief in the world. Like,
not that you remember much of it.
No. She played it slightly, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
And I didn't remember. When I come out, like, my mind was blank, but I was just so happy.
Yeah, exactly. And it was amazing. It was such a relief. And every single time we had a scan from there, we've got scans, major scans either. But every time we've left a scan, it's been on such a high, and every time we've gone into it, it's been like a shaky mess.
And I've noticed with each scan that we've had, that it's anxiety gets less and less and less. Even the 20-week one that we've just had, we were so chill. Like, it was amazing to feel not just poop in our pants.
For a change. Yeah, definitely.
So many things that you've said there, they resonate with me and a lot of the stuff I talk about how so much of it is controlled by our anxiety and our fear because of what's happened before. But you really try to grab back. And I talk about that, like I can't take that anxiety away necessarily, but it's about stealing back some of those moments so that you can enjoy them and enjoying. Like, I love that you said, even with your miscarriage, like that you enjoyed those 7 to 8 weeks. And I love that. And I got a message from someone a while ago when I was posting about this, saying how they spent their 2 week wait pregnant. You know, they decided that they were pregnant and it was the best time, the best 2 weeks. And unfortunately, it was a negative test, but they had that time with their embryo, you know, and they made that what they wanted and what they could. And I know that that's easier said than done sometimes. And with that are the sobbing at doors to go into scans. And I know I sobbed onto many a scan table. But definitely, you know, there are complete highs and lows. But it's really nice to hear also that you are almost kind of settling into it now and feeling that bit more comfortable. For me personally, and I'd be interested to hear for you guys, it was once the bump started to show, although I did feel a bit uncomfortable about the bump showing and people touching me. And possibly you haven't got that because of COVID. Perhaps that's one silver lining. I don't know. People might want everyone's hands all over them. It's totally up your bag, whatever works. But the other thing is perhaps you're feeling movements and things. And I think once that kicks in, and it can be so different for everyone when the movements start, and depending on where your placenta is, that can change it as well, and the frequency of the movements. But I think that I'm right in saying that you're feeling movements now. And has that helped as well?
That has helped enormously. It's amazing what a difference, like, you just, that it's just that daily reassurance that when you can't feel movements, you don't know when you go into that next scan what has happened. Whereas if you felt a movement that day or the day before or whenever, then you've kind of got that reassurance that
they're moving
they must be all right. And it's so nice to kind of share that together, because you've been able to feel it through my tummy as well, haven't you?
Yeah, it's amazing. So at first you were saying you felt it quite low down.
Mm-hmm.
They felt like bubbles.
Yeah.
So a bit, and you wasn't sure whether that's what it was at first.
Yeah, it took a couple of days to kind of figure that out.
And then it was only a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? I put my hand there and I was like, wait, I think I felt it. And it was so slight, but we wasn't sure. Yeah. But then it was in the evening, the babies are more active in the evening, I think. He just kicked so hard.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, obviously I cried.
Obviously.
And then, I don't think you'll mind me saying this, like, Lucy's got, like, a little bit of podge, just
bit of extra padding around the middle.
Around the middle. So you hadn't really felt anything up there. And you had these couple of moments where you were looking at me going, my stomach feels weird, or my tummy feels so strange. And I think he might be a bit higher. And I put my hand there, like, 2 nights ago.
Yeah.
And he gave the biggest kick, and I just sobbed. I was like, oh my gosh, I love him so much.
We both sobbed.
Oh, as you should, for sure. And you know that you're having a boy. Was that a decision that you'd already made, that you wanted to find out what the gender was?
I think so. We did the Harmony test at 10 weeks, so we knew at 12 weeks that it was a little boy.
We just didn't want to wait for anything else. I was so overweight in. We wanted to just
know and enjoy it. And yeah.
And do you think that that's helped you? For me, anyway, part of that was connecting with the baby. And I've just done an amazing conversation, actually. It will be out now. People can go and listen to my episode with Julianne from Parenthood in Mind about connecting with the baby. And for me, that was one of the things that I needed. Like, you get the bump and the kicks. But I really wanted to know. I wanted to get to know my child as quickly as possible, and that might not be for everyone. You know, I hear a lot of stories, and I quite like the idea of it being a surprise at the end in many ways. But I, after waiting so long, I knew that I wanted to start to get to know them as soon as possible. Tell us about your experience with that.
You said something like that recently, didn't you? That you felt like about just being able to connect
and being able to kind of picture more what it's going to be like when he's here, and you've got, like, more of an idea. I don't know. Like, it wouldn't have been different if it was a girl, but in my head, it's more, I don't know how to explain it.
More real.
It makes it feel a bit more real. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it.
And I think some people, again, don't agree when I say things like this, but it would, like Lucy said, it wouldn't have mattered if they'd have been a girl or a boy. But before we'd ever started to do any kind of fertility treatment, and when we'd first ever started talking about it, we always said, oh my gosh, I'd love to have a little boy.
Like, we've always pictured ourselves with a little boy.
And then as time went on, people would ask, and I'm like, I honestly don't care. They could be an alien. I don't care. But when we read that on the screen and it said that you're having a boy, I was like, oh my gosh, this is everything that we ever wanted. Like,
yeah, I think we'd kind of got it into our heads that everything we've been through, we're not going to get that lucky to get a boy as well.
Yeah. But again, like we said, we wouldn't have cared any less if it had been a girl. It's just, we was just like, thank you, universe.
I think that people can suffer with quite a lot of guilt around that because, and I know that I've had conversations with people and they've really wanted, you know, a particular, a girl, say, and it's turned out to be a boy. And exactly like you say, ultimately, what I would say 99.9, if not 100% of people want is a healthy baby. But we do have ideals in our mind. It's the same if you are suddenly expecting twins and you didn't, expect that. It's just about hearing that information, processing it, and then moving forward once it's processed. It's just, and I think that people, I know I had a conversation with someone who felt incredibly guilty because they thought, oh my God, but I'm pregnant and I'm, you know, having a healthy baby, but it's just, you know, I think they had a boy and so they wanted a girl. They felt really bad because actually they were having another boy and they felt really bad for being upset about that. But it's just a change in, you know, in your mind, like to what the reality is. So I don't know. I think that's okay.
I think so too.
Brilliant. So how are you feeling, Lucy? Tell us.
I'm feeling pretty good. It's been obviously a rocky journey to kind of get where we are. Even once I've been pregnant, as I mentioned, I've bled through my first trimester. So as much as we tried to enjoy that, there was that anxiety there. And then at 10 weeks, I ended up admitted to hospital because I was having problems with my heart being super, super fast. So then I got investigated for that. And then I got diagnosed with, what is it, POTS syndrome?
Yeah.
Which is tachycardia when, what is it, positional tachycardia. So anything from when I stand up or when I'm not laid down, my heart rate just goes a little bit mental.
So when you're not laid down, so anytime you sit up or stand up, your heart rate goes, like, gets excessive. Okay.
Yeah.
To walk, when you was walking up a flight of steps, so we're on the second floor. And our heart rate by the time she got to the top was 180. And that just when I was like, okay, let's go to A&E.
And then they kept me in for 3 days. But it's regular done that now from 10 weeks to we're now 20 weeks pregnant. And now we finally got the diagnosis and I'm under a cardiologist and a joint clinic with the obstetrics and the cardiologist as well. So I'm being monitored, but they're not too worried about it. It's mainly going to be about like
managing
my symptoms because it's obviously very tiring having your heart rate go so high and then being pregnant as well and things like that.
And is that a complication, a potential complication of pregnancy, or is that something that you've experienced before? Or
never had anything like this before. No. So they're thinking it started during pregnancy. It's just a very kind of crazy reaction to being pregnant. And they're hoping that it stops as soon as I give birth, basically.
Yeah.
But we'll carry on monitoring it after and see. So hopefully that is the case.
They don't think it's going to have any kind of impact in terms of giving birth and labour. They think you should be able to just kind of do whatever we want to do still.
Yeah.
And obviously they'll monitor it as it goes on and see if they need to make any changes for that.
So that's been the main kind of challenge so far with the pregnancies, the worry about my heart, making sure that I'm all right and that it's not going to affect baby, which they've said it won't do. So that's really reassuring.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. And how are you feeling looking forward? And you don't need to go into any of, you know, your decisions or thoughts or anything necessarily, but how are you feeling? You mentioned their birth options about looking up and looking forward in your pregnancy and planning and you know, it sounds like you are going to need to be flexible potentially because depending on what happens with, what was it, tachycardia?
Yeah, so it's POTS syndrome, but POTS tachycardia syndrome just means fast heart rate, right?
So depending on what happens with the POTS syndrome, you might need to be flexible anyway. Are you able to be thinking about birth plans and birth options and that kind of thing?
I think I'm quite looking forward to thinking about it and researching the options and what we can and can't do. I don't think there's much point in having a plan because, as you said, I'm going to have to be flexible. They're going to monitor my heart. And at the end of the day, I will do anything that I need to get the baby here safely and me out of it the other end safely. So I don't think we're going to have a plan per se. I think it's more going to be a matter of researching what the options are, what the different medications are, the side effects, and what we would like and what we wouldn't like, ideally. But at the end of it,
nothing's set in stone.
Nothing's going to be set in stone. Even when we do have a birth plan, it's going to be more of a let's wing it.
It's about your desires, but you accept that that might not be where it goes. I think that's the important thing.
Absolutely.
It does feel kind of like the unknown.
Mm.
Like, I have no idea where we start with any of that kind of stuff. I was saying, I felt like such a pro at IVF, and then pregnancy, I'm like, what's this?
Well, that's part of the problem, I think, because we don't look at it. We're too scared. And that's why I specifically ask you that, are you looking up and looking forward? Because I think we go through our pregnancies a lot of the time looking down at our bumps or, you know, even pre-bump, because we're too scared to consider that options are there. That's part of the hard thing, whether it's an abdominal birth, whether it's a vaginal birth, whether it's there's some support there, you know, it just, yeah, there's a lot of options and it's confusing and it's frightening to think about them sometimes. So I think the research, when you're ready, is so important. It really is. But like I say, in your own time. So just before we go, I just want to ask you, and you did touch upon it earlier on with the scanxiety and not being able to stroke, being able to get into the scan. But obviously COVID has put a huge spanner in the works with regards to pregnancy care and support and seeing our friends and family. And this, like, we're heading towards Christmas, which this Christmas is going to be so different for you in so many good ways, in all the positive ways. And like, are you seeing family and friends? How are you feeling around people? And how are they feeling? Have you talked to them? I bet it's so frustrating. You know, you're finally pregnant and they do want to put their hands all over your tummy because that's what people want to do, honestly. And they're not able to. Like, talk to us about that.
Yeah, so all our friends are super excited. And it's almost like our friends and our family have kind of been along on the whole kind of journey with us. And it's obviously it's different between us and them, but it must be so disappointing to them to be thinking, oh, maybe we won't see them as soon as they're born, on things like that.
Especially with our family, because we live in London and 95% of our family live in Manchester or in other areas of the country. So we've not actually seen
anyone
since March from our family.
Yeah.
And that was when your grandma was in hospital. So it was only a fleeting visit and not under the best circumstances. So. No.
But family is super excited.
They're so excited. We've not seen them. I think they are a bit worried about, or not necessarily worried, but wondering about what the logistics are going to be when the baby does come, because obviously we need to make sure we're safe and that the baby's safe.
And that our family's safe as
well. And that our family's safe as well. Yeah, exactly.
Me working in a hospital, I don't want to be going visiting my grandma.
No. Yeah, no, it's so difficult. But we have no real idea kind of what we're going to do at that point. But we're due in April. Hopefully we'll have some form of normality back by April, or they'll start rolling out this vaccine, or we'll be able to make it work in terms of if family can come and visit, even just with a couple at a time and they're wearing masks, or we'll figure
it's
out.
It's sad though, isn't it? Lucy's got her grandma and her great-grandma still alive, which is just, I'm so excited. I cannot wait for our little boy to have a picture of like his grandma, his great grandma, and his great great grandma. Like,
yeah.
I can't wait. It's like one of my biggest things that I've said throughout. Like, I really want them to meet your great grandma.
So COVID needs to do one.
Do one for so many different reasons. And that right there at the top for sure. It's been such a confusing and difficult time for everyone, and especially everyone within this community who has waited so long. And that is, you know, us and our families and friends as well. And it's just, it isn't fair, you know, and if there are people out there stamping their foot and feeling like a spoilt brat, like, do it, because that is exactly how I would feel. It's just not fair. And that's not taking away from everything that is going on with people, you know, and we know how difficult COVID is for lots and lots of people. But, you know, in your own situations, this is not fair that this is potentially being taken away from you. But it sounds like you two have got each other. And I think that you will take it as it comes very much. And hopefully you will get that picture without question. And even if they are... it's quite a lot of people to get in a, like a gal to get that picture sorted. Oh well, thank you so much, Lucy and Amy, for joining me. I really, really appreciate you coming and sharing your story with us today. Do head over, all of the links to your YouTube and your Instagram and everything will be in the show notes, so if anyone wants to find out more, go over and say hi to the girls. And yeah, that's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Bye.
Bye.